Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Here's a bit of a salty quote, so a tiny bit of a language warning, but it's worth listening to. Here goes. It goes, "If that girl had been born with balls, she would have been a hell of a politician." Well, that's what Joseph Kennedy once said of his daughter Eunice. But of course, in the Kennedy clan, it was the men who were groomed for political stardom. The women were meant to support them. But in her magnificent new biography, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Eileen McNamara makes the persuasive case that of all the Kennedys and all of their accomplishments, it was Eunice who had the greatest, most lasting impact on American life. Take, for example, the creation of Special Olympics. It celebrates its 50th anniversary this year, and it'll feature almost 5 million athletes from more than 170 countries. Now, back in 1997, we have this bit of tape here from Eunice Kennedy Shriver speaking at the, 1987 Special Olympics.
"The right to play on any playing field, you have earned it. The right to study in any school, you have earned it. The right to hold a job, you have earned it. The days of separation and segregation are over."
Now, in that little bit of tape, you hear Eunice Kennedy Shriver talking about seeking dignity and justice for those with intellectual disabilities. And that's why McNamara says that it was Eunice who helped bring about one of the great civil rights achievements of our time. The new book is called Eunice, The Kennedy Who Changed the World, and Eileen McNamara joins us now in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Meghna.
So I'm a little ashamed to say this, Eileen, but I didn't have any idea, other than the founding of Special Olympics, that Eunice Kennedy Shriver was as accomplished as she was.
Well, I don't think I had any idea either until I began doing the research for this book.
So what made you want to start looking at who she was?
Well, you know, there's a coincidence of the timing of her death and Senator Ted Kennedy's death. And you may remember that period.
Oh, yes.
It was in 2009, and Eunice died 2 weeks before Ted. And she was buried from a little clapboard church on the Cape. And as you recall, Senator Kennedy lay in repose at the Kennedy Library. His body was flown to Washington, where he was taken through the city to the Capitol and laid to rest beside his brothers. And the contrast struck me.
Right. I mean, I recall that time exquisitely well because I was actually assigned to the Kennedy Library to cover the thousands of people who wanted to walk past Ted Kennedy's casket to pay their respects. And I filed, I don't know, a couple dozen stories in those several days. And it didn't even occur to me once that his sister had died exactly 14 days before that.
She had, indeed. Yeah. And I'm not suggesting at all that Senator Kennedy didn't deserve that attention. But history has a way of overlooking women. And Eunice Kennedy Shriver was a remarkable woman who has been overlooked.
Well, I know that you're undoing history's oversight of Eunice with this book, but I was wondering if you could actually just read us a little bit from the introduction here where you describe sort of how, you know, in part because of who the Kennedys were themselves and their family patriarch, about why maybe we don't recognize Eunice as much as we should today.
Sure, I'd be glad to. "Invisible or interchangeable, that was the lot of the daughters of Joseph P. and Rose Fitzgerald Kennedy, relegated to the role of decorative accessories to the outside ambitions, first of their father and then their brothers. Charming London society when Joe was U ambassador to the Court of St. James in the late 30s, hosting ladies' teas during Jack's first congressional race a decade later. Accompanying one of their brothers during the continual campaign that defined the Kennedys' lives for more than half a century. From Jack's ascendancy as the first Catholic president through Bobby's ill-fated run for the White House to Ted's long career in the Senate, Eunice, Pat, and Jean, the three Kennedy sisters not lost young to tragedy, were a silent backdrop to the nation's storied political dynasty. In the case of Eunice, that image was wildly out of focus. There was nothing silent or ornamental about the fifth of Joe and Rose Kennedy's 9 children. Even as she hatched the idea for those tea parties, Eunice chafed at such a circumcised role for what was fast becoming the family business. Dear Daddy, I know you are very busy, she wrote to her father at Hyannisport, probably in the late 50s. I also know that you are advising everyone else in that house on their careers, so why not me?
That's Eileen McNamara reading from her new biography of Eunice Kennedy Shriver. It's called Eunice, the Kennedy Who Changed the World. That letter where that you quote Eunice asking her father, Joe, why wasn't he advising her? I mean, did he ever respond to that?
Not that we know of. I don't have a letter from him in return. And the fact is, Eunice knew why not.
Because she was a woman.
Because she was a woman. And his focus was on getting one of his sons elected to the presidency, Jack first, maybe Bobby next, if he had his way. The girls were just overlooked.
Yeah. It's amazing, though, because I mean, they were overlooked in terms of their public potential by Joe Kennedy. Right. But it seems as if members of the Kennedy clan recognized Eunice's innate talent. Like early on in the book, you write how even as Eunice Kennedy, she was born in 1921, right?
Yes.
That even as a young girl, her mother Rose, she would keep these lovely little note cards about
right.
each of the children, and Rose looked back at the note cards and said that Eunice, even as a young girl, was wonderfully well coordinated, one of the best athletes in the family, a talker with a special way of expressing herself, also a good listener, marvelously generous in her interest in others, especially her brothers and sisters, but also including waifs, strays, and anyone who needed her. So it seemed like she sort of stood out from the start.
Well, I think she probably did. I'm not sure that those are the ways in which she stood out. I mean, the story of Eunice is often portrayed as this compassionate, lovely heiress who did good works. Well, there was nothing particularly nice about Eunice Kennedy Shriver. She was a tough cookie. And I think she was propelled in her life as much by rage as she was by compassion.
So rage because of her sister?
Rage because of her sister.
So her sister Rosemary.
Her sister Rosemary.
The one who was given a lobotomy.
She was lobotomized in 1941 when she was 23 years old. It was perhaps a well-intentioned but clearly misguided attempt on Joe's part to deal with the mental illnesses that compounded her intellectual disabilities. And it was an abysmal failure.
Right.
A disaster for Rosemary. She was left unable to speak or walk.
And then so after that lobotomy in 1941, she was essentially shut away.
She was. She was confined to a psychiatric hospital north of New York City for 9 years, where she got no rehabilitation at all. And in 1949, she was transferred out to Wisconsin to a Catholic institution that did do rehabilitative work with people with intellectual disabilities. And she eventually did learn to talk, not much. She couldn't say very many words. One of the words she could say was Eunice. And she could walk again.
Okay. Now, in 1961 or 62, it was Eunice, after Joseph Kennedy's stroke, it was Eunice who brought her sister back into the fold, so to speak.
She brought her right back into the heart of the family.
But in those intervening 20 years, what did you discover about what Eunice knew and how she reacted to, like, her sister who just basically had vanished from the family's life?
Well, I think it says volumes about the power that Joe Kennedy exerted over his wife and his children, that he laid down the law that Rosemary was not to be part of the family, that doctors had advised him it wasn't good for her to be part of such a competitive crew, and that she shouldn't receive visits from them. So they didn't visit.
Huh. So she, even though she had this sort of simmering rage, as you say, about her sister and the way her sister was treated, she never questioned her father?
Well, we don't know that.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of holes in the story of Rosemary, because over the years, the Kennedys told quite a variety of stories, and most of them weren't accurate. So we don't know the full extent of what Eunice knew and when she knew it. I did discover a letter in the Kennedy Library from Rose to St. Coletta's, which is the institution where Rosemary lived. And it was a letter that came in the 1970s in which they were replacing Rosemary's physician. And Rose said, I'll pass this on to Mrs. Shriver, because Mrs. Shriver was involved with the original decision about her medical care when she first went to St. Coletta's. Mm-hmm. Well, that would have been 1949. So perhaps Joe told her then.
Okay. But we don't really know.
We don't really know.
So for Eunice Kennedy, in, as you write in the biography, the backdrop of what happened to Rosemary is key to understanding who Eunice is and who she became. So we have that backdrop, but I want to get into some of the details that you write about so beautifully about Eunice's life and her accomplishments as well. In those years where Rosemary was out of the picture, just as an aside, there's this wonderful, you bring up a couple of quotes that describe her as maybe the best sailor in the family, mm-hmm. which I love because they're all the iconic images of the Kennedys on sailboats. It's all the Kennedy men. But here right. we hear that Eunice was fantastic on the water as well, and also really great, strong athlete. And
she was a remarkable athlete. In fact, I didn't put this story in the book, but it's a classic. Vicky Kennedy, Ted's second wife, learned how to sail in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And she won a competition in her little sailboat. And so Eunice offered to have a party for her at her house in Hyannisport. So Vicky told me she was thrilled and excited to go to this party. And when they got there, Eunice had taken out every sailing trophy that she had ever won and displayed them all over the dining room table.
So you may have won one, but look at all these.
That's right. So competitive to the end. Yeah.
But so I hadn't realized until I read the book that Eunice actually played quite a key role in Jack Kennedy's early political career, right? I mean, you write about how she was showed to have some intense political savvy at a young age, right? That Jack Kennedy had Eunice give some of his speeches for his House race in the mid 40s, and it was her idea, as you mentioned earlier, to hold these tea parties to get women behind the Kennedy candidacy. All of that came from her,
right? And in 1946, she was his surrogate. There were often times when he had to be in two places at once, and he dispatched Eunice. She loved to give speeches. She was very good at it. The tea parties were the brainchild of Eunice and a city councilman in Cambridge. And all of Jack's advisors said it was a terrible idea, that better to spend the money on beer busts for all the young men just back from World War II, because nobody would show up. And people not only showed up, but there were lines of women around the block at the Hotel Commander in Harvard Square in Cambridge.
So is that when Jack Kennedy learned to sort of implicitly trust his sister's ideas and strategy?
I think he did. And when he went to Washington in 1947, she went with him.
Right. And you talked about how she they would throw dinner parties. They lived together.
They did. They were roommates.
And when the men would retire to another room to talk politics after dinner, she'd go with them.
She went with them. She left the ladies in the parlor to gossip. And she lit up her own stogie so that she smoked cigars with them as well.
Wow. Now, so it seems as if Jack Kennedy recognized his sister's potential, but you write how there's a period between the, you know, the late 40s, early 50s, and when she finally marries Sergeant Shriver many, many years later, where she actually had talked about to her father, I think she wanted to, instead of getting married, she wanted to continue being socially active. She was looking at criminal justice for young people, things like that. And Joe Kennedy didn't want any of it.
Right. He was happy to have her work, but she worked for the Justice Department on an initiative on juvenile delinquency in 1947 and 48. And he was happy to have her do that, but only if it was a little interim period between college and marriage. But Eunice, in fact, wanted to become a nun. She in service of her social work, she felt the Catholic Church offered women few leadership positions, but the sisters that she studied with at the Sisters of the Sacred Heart were role models for her. And I went to London to the boarding school where she was taught by the Sisters of the Sacred Heart, and found one of her old classmates who herself had become a nun. And Sister Dorothy Bell told me that of all of her classmates, everyone was more sure that Eunice had a vocation, even that she herself had a vocation.
Wow. But Joe Kennedy didn't want that.
He did not.
Oh, because he wanted his son to become the first president who was a Catholic, and having his sister, I guess, become a nun wouldn't have helped that?
Well, can you imagine the optics of a woman in a black
in a wimple, right?
In a wimple and a black veil. I don't think at the time it would have been very helpful for
Interesting.
Jessica.
So her ambitions in that front were subjugated to that of her brothers.
But they were thwarted, I would say, not just subjugated. And in service of convincing her not to become a nun, he impressed Father Ted Hesburgh, the president of Notre Dame, to call Eunice down from Chicago, where she was living and doing social work, to tell her that she did not have a vocation, that her vocation was to marry Sergeant Shriver.
Wow.
And Father Hesburgh told that story for decades, but never on the record.
Huh. Until now.
Until now. And he's died since. But when I called him, he was 97 years old, and he waited a long time on the phone as he paused to think about whether he would confirm it. And he said, well, they're all dead now. It can't hurt anybody. Yes. I did do that.
Wow. Well, perhaps it was for the best, though, because I think the thing that my eyes were most open to in this book, in this biography, Eileen, is that you write about so many things that have the Kennedy name attached to it, but it's Jack Kennedy's name, whereas really it was Eunice who was the brains and the motivating and the political force behind it. Like, for example, can you tell us about the story of how the Mental Retardation Facilities and Community Mental Health Center Construction Act of 1963 was passed?
I can. Yeah. Jack Kennedy had no public record in the United States Senate on what we then called mental retardation. He was, in fact, on the committee that would have heard legislation, the first legislation on the federal level that would have provided federal money for special education. And he walked out of the hearing room. So he comes to the presidency with no track record. Before he even takes the oath of office, Eunice makes him commit to impaneling what she called the President's Panel on Mental Retardation. She picked all 27 members of that panel. Huh. And she served as a consultant on that panel, where they wrote the legislation that you just described. It happened to be the last piece of legislation Jack Kennedy ever saw signed. But she wrote it, and she wrote it with these 27 experts. Never served on the panel herself. She was a consultant to the panel because she said years later, well, the nepotism wouldn't have looked right. You think Bobby said that when they appointed him Attorney General?
Obviously not.
Or that Ted said that when he ran for Jack's seat in the United States Senate from Massachusetts. I don't think so.
Wow. I mean, so there's so much. Obviously, this was a life's calling for her to advocate for, you know, treating those with intellectual disabilities with dignity and with justice. That she goes on to, through her work as really being the head of the Kennedy Family Foundation, right?
Right.
She ends up founding what becomes what? Well, she ended up founding the Special Olympics.
Right. She basically hijacked the family's charitable foundation, and she turned its focus exclusively to intellectual disabilities. And it's interesting to note that for all of the years the Kennedy Foundation was operating in a vibrant way, the name of the president was either Jack Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, or Ted Kennedy. And they had nothing to do with the foundation. She ran it. She set its priorities. She did the work. They got the credit.
I mean, we're only scraping the surface of all the things that you write about that Eunice Kennedy really has her fingerprints on. So that's why I want everyone to read the biography. But you also, as you mentioned a little bit earlier, you write about how she wasn't a saint, right? She was impatient, didn't really maybe have time for a lot of the social mores of the 50s and 60s. Sometimes maybe a slight, a loving but distant mother
That's fair.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, it's a fair biography on that point. But I'm wondering what you think of this. Your biography of Eunice Kennedy Shriver is coming out at the same time where we have yet another pop culture representation of the male Kennedys through the new Chappaquiddick movie that's coming out.
Right.
And that got me thinking, did you ever find out about what Eunice herself, so smart, so effective, so full of potential, what she thought about the way her family, and particularly her brothers, how they treated women.
Well, that's an excellent question. I think Maria Shriver describes her mother best, I think, on this point. Yeah. When she says that her adoration is pretty close to the right word, of Jack, didn't allow her to accept what she knew to be true. She was his roommate in the 40s. There were a parade of secretaries and stewardesses going out of that townhouse in Georgetown. There's no way that she didn't know. But she was able to just divide her consciousness so that she didn't accept it. She was much tougher on Teddy. You know, after his divorce from Joan, and when he was in his sort of wild period, she was all over him.
Oh, interesting.
But she didn't tolerate anyone criticizing him publicly, especially her children. Anthony Shriver was at Georgetown when Ted was in that period, and he would run into Ted in the bars in Georgetown. And he would say, "Mom, I saw Teddy last night. He was," and he would begin to proceed to talk about his wild evening. And his mother would say, "Well, did you see him on the floor of the Senate this morning? Let's go talk to Ted and let's get that speech that he gave. It's a wonderful speech, Anthony, wonderful speech." Hmm. So she deflected a lot.
Yeah. But so, I mean, in that case, in Eunice's case, though, maybe she might have been privately willing to be more critical of Ted Kennedy, but it sounds like publicly she was still very much loyal to her family.
Oh, she was the most loyal of anyone in the family.
Yeah. So interesting. I mean, I get it. Like, family is family, no matter who you are. But on the other hand, I mean, you quote that Bobby Kennedy once said that Eunice probably would have made as good of president as anybody
right.
in the family.
That's Bobby Jr., yeah.
I mean, so, but she had to know that.
Oh, she knew it. She absolutely knew it. And she resented it. I mean, then she gave a wonderful speech 2 years before she died at the Kennedy Library when finally they had an evening to celebrate her accomplishments. And she said, "I grew up hearing that real power was not for me." And she knew it was. She wielded it. She just wielded it behind the scenes.
Yeah. Well, we actually have another little clip from that very speech.
Ah.
Again, this is Eunice Kennedy Shriver in 2007 at the JFK Library. They were celebrating her. And she thanked everyone for coming and said this in part about her life.
"I am lucky that I experienced the sting of rejection as a woman who was told that the real power was not for me. I am lucky that I saw my mother and my sister Rosemary treated with unbearable rejection. The combination of the love of my family and the awful sting of rejection helped me to develop the confidence that I needed to believe that I could make a difference in a positive direction."
Now, is that her sort of pounding the lectern?
I was going to say, if you listen, you can hear her pounding the lectern. She was a very angry woman.
Yeah. I mean, it has to make you wonder, what if, right?
Yes.
What if she'd been born a generation or two later?
Absolutely. I don't think there's any question that she would have been in public office.
Yeah. So in the last minute that we have, it seems as if when you look at the totality of Eunice Kennedy Shriver's life, and also she lived to be 88, so one of the longest lived Kennedys, I can see why you're making the case that she has had more impact on more people than any of the Kennedy men. But even more than Ted Kennedy, I mean, he was in the Senate for 50 years.
He was in the Senate for 50 years. And during a lot of those years, he was carrying Eunice's water. A lot of the legislation that he is justifiably credited for found its origins in her head, not his head. I mean, in 1975 was the first time that a child born with intellectual disabilities had a right to a public school classroom seat. That was Eunice. That wasn't Ted.
Wow. Well, the new biography is Eunice, The Kennedy Who Changed the World. It is Eileen McNamara's biography of Eunice Kennedy Shriver. Eileen is a Pulitzer Prize-winning former columnist for the Boston Globe and now the director of the journalism program at Brandeis University. Eileen will also be speaking tomorrow night at the JFK Presidential Library. We've got information about the event at radioboston.org. It has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for the book, Eileen, and thank you for coming in.
Well, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.